Case number 2, Tony Solano versus Land America, Commonwealth title. Solano, if you'll approach.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hello. Everything started with a relocation from New Mexico to Fort Worth through my husband's company, BNSF. They provide a relocation company, Sendant PHH Mortgage Company, and Relo, to contract with third-party services who basically do up everything for the contract states that all pre-closing activity is to be performed without the customer and ready when you get there. So my husband signed an unimproved property contract. The contract stated that the property legally described was the property that was going to be conveyed. The legal description and only legal description on that contract was Lot 43, Block 1, Hills of Gilmore Creek, City of Fort Worth, 7610607, and that it was located in the city, and of course, later found out that it was not. The appellee submitted a unimproved property contract that has an initial change stamp on count number 6. And they altered the unimproved property contract, which changed the title insurance. That was pointed out numerous times to the trial court. And there's no initials in that initial change box.
And so your point is that they...
Well, there was a set time in which to convey that property by contract. That property has never been conveyed. Now, their title exam for the purpose of title insurance, they knew that that didn't exist. We didn't know that they knew until it was in 2002. And they refused to give me any title documents, and because the property that we were building, we had problems with the builder because he wasn't building according to the blueprints and the specs. So we put the mortgage company on notice and said, don't disperse anymore, and the kids and I made a rush move down here into a rental. And when I put in for permits, the city of Fort Worth, those letters from the government agency stating it was an illegal subdivision, and that, and then he told me, the city of Fort Worth told me that I needed to contact the health department. And I said, you mean this isn't in the city? And Mr. Simons said, no, it's not. It's in the ETJ, but it's not in the city. And you have to have the amount of land in which to comply with the contracts makes it so you have to do an illegal, occupy the property illegally. Well, that was the first thing, and then later found out that there was no correct legal description at all, period. And the title company gave 4 different legal descriptions to the court in their summary judgment, all ambiguous, and different meets and bounds. The lot and block, none of them is property that is occupied by us. And this home is only partially built. I just got hot water. There's no insulation. There's no heat. There's no AC. And they basically have held us hostage to a one-time construction loan contract. And the contract for the construction loan is only a lot and block. No meets and bounds attached.
Yeah, I guess I'm missing the big picture here. You have a certain amount of money to build a house, and from your standpoint, the house isn't properly described, and it turns out not to be in the city, it's in the ETJ. Okay, what does that have to do with the amount of money that you had to build a house, regardless of where it is, and why you don't have all of the normal housing amenities?
Well, when I first called the city of Fort Worth, I called to complain about the building inspector. Wanted to talk to him. Wanted to know who was inspecting. And then that's when I was informed that it was an illegal subdivision. He even put it in writing. Tarrant County Health Department wrote me two letters. They wrote letters, first of all, in 2002, and then updated those in 2004 because the appellees signed a Rule 11 contract in which they agreed to correct the legal description on all the contracts, and they were supposed to put in for a variance from platting requirements and plat, and they failed to do that. So I informed the court, and you know, numerous times, because they were precluded from continuing to offer documents in which they've even offered to you. In their summary judgment, all those documents, they, at all times, they've known the legal description is incorrect. And what made matters worse was that all the monies that we put down, we were never given, it was never shown on the HUDs. There were three different HUD ones. They were all altered after my husband signed. My signature on all the documents that were notarized by the notary and claiming that I was there in front of her signing, that's false. I wasn't at closing. The signature on all the documents is not mine. And so you've got, there is no correct legal description at all, period, that is on file with the courts, except for I've got the best legal description, and that was due to a foreclosure and a surveyor. I was allowed to have a surveyor testify and gave evidence to the court. They foreclosed on a one-time construction loan of $225,000, in which only around $50,000 was disbursed. But we put out over $200,000, and it doesn't show any place. And one of the things that I showed that was really easy to see was on the HUD ones. There were three different HUD ones issued. The approved HUD 1 had to show a builder's advance of $39,680. On the signature page of the HUD 1, if you look down at the bottom, the federal forms have a date and identification number, and that is, says 412. And on page 1 and page 2, that they later represented, has 413 on it. And the notary wrote in 413.
Yeah, let me go back to my big picture question. From your position, the title company did not properly identify the location of the property. How does that affect you getting money to build the house, or the builder not being paid, or the construction not being finished? How, I'm trying to tie these to your problem with what you said they did.
Okay, legally, all of the contracts require us in which to use the property as the contracts demand. Okay, it requires us to do illegally occupy property. The other problem is the fact that the property legally described, whether it was lot and block or meets and bounds, none of those are correct. And nothing has ever been conveyed. Nothing.
But Does that have something to do with you not being able to get the money to build the house, or are you just complaining that?
Well, we were told it was.
You don't know where it is, according, because you can't get a proper
survey. We don't have a correct legal description. You can't legally, and the title policies have a meets and bounds legal description that is not the same meets and bounds legal description as the survey's meets and bounds. It's meets and bounds is not platted. Lot and block is platted. Okay, so you've got ambiguous contracts. They're all documents filed of record that were notarized purporting that my signature was, I signed. I didn't. And they knew it. There was a Rule 11 contract entered into in June 7th of 04, where all the parties agreed that they were going to correct the legal description, that they were going to basically create all new documents with a correct survey and a correct legal description, put in for a variance from platting requirements, plat, and get the permits. You can't legally get the permits. That's what I'm saying. I don't have the permits.
Okay, so you haven't been able to finish the house because you haven't been able to get the permits to finish the house because you need a correct legal description? Is that...
I need a correct legal description in order to comply with the land use laws, and the fact that we were promised a platted legal piece of property to begin with, and it turns out we weren't. The city of Fort Worth, if I can have a correct legal description, I can actually file for a variance and prove, show that that I should be allowed a variance from platting requirements.
So what you want here today is a correct legal description of your property so that you can get the permits to finish the house and get a variance? Is that what you want?
That's what we've never been, yes. And we've entered into Rule 11s, we've entered into settlement agreements, all which have been breached. And what is upsetting for me is to see that the appellees, they were precluded from continuing to represent documents to this court and to the trial court when they knew that it was an incorrect legal description.
But all you want is a correct legal description of your property. That's what...
We spent over $105,000 in attorney fees. I just paid out $5,000 to attorneys who are supposed to quiet title. But we ran into some problems. And the fact that... they foreclosed on $225,000, a one-time construction loan, and they did it at a time when my husband was on his deathbed.
Well, now, wait, who is they in that instance? Who foreclosed?
The defendants. Appellees.
Which ones?
These
in this case or those in the severed case that's still going on in the trial court?
Well, it's First American and... they merged with Commonwealth Land Title. There's all these mergers. So I say the appellees. And they filed of record the same identical documents, which they already knew were incorrect. They knew that the 225 that they foreclosed on and turned around and bought it themselves for the client, PHH, the mortgage company, they ended up spending around $329,000. And it was on property that they already knew was not legally correct. Then they filed an FED, forcible entry and detainer, and tried to evict us from property that they already knew we didn't occupy.
What you did get a warranty deed, correct?
Yes.
And
well,
what
not until 2002.
Okay. And what legal description is in the warranty deed?
The legal description on the warranty deed is not correct. It is a meets and bounds, and we did not receive that until 2002 from Tyndall Storage, who mailed it to me. I was trying to get a title policy. That's when I received the owner's title policy. It's when I received where it showed that the warranty deed had been filed more than once, and it stated that the sole reason to refile was to correct the legal description, which, of course, that wasn't done.
So the first warranty deed, is that the one that had the lot and block in it?
No, the first warranty deed is meets and bounds, and it's completely incorrect. The second warranty deed that they refiled is incorrect. And then they filed in their summary judgment and created another legal description on a warranty deed because it wasn't as the document that was filed of record, which I proved to the court, because somebody hand wrote in there, scratched off in the meets and bounds, and penciled in a different legal description. And so, and I told the trial court judge, I said, look, I go, what I have submitted to you are certified copies that show the clerk's stamp on there, stating, you know, that's what's filed of record. The affidavits that were submitted have at all time by the appellees, they knew that those were false affidavits that were used in support of their summary judgments.
Yeah.
And the affidavit of Judy Asa, she is the one who said that everything that was filed was as documents filed of record, which I proved that wasn't. It was easy to see with the warranty deed, and I've got those. Also, that Vanessa McCaffrey, she was the closer. Vanessa McCaffrey notarized signatures purporting that I was in front of her and signing, and she knew, and I've never met her. And at a second hearing after their summary judgments, her counsel even stated that I didn't even know what happened. It's hearsay because I wasn't there. She wasn't there, and she doesn't know what happened.
All right, Ms. Solano, your time is up now. You will have a five-minute rebuttal after the appellees respond.
Okay, thank you. Can I say one more thing?
No, your time's up. You can in your rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Fortney.
I please the court. My name is Walter Fortney. I'm with Loss Taker & Gamble. And David Littman is here with me. He's done most of the briefing for us. I'm going to try to stick to what this case is about and not what you've just heard. If I tried to answer that, you would never really hear what this case is all about. The Solanos purchased a lot and entered into a contract to build a house on it. I've actually been in the house. They were dissatisfied with the construction and with some alleged problems they had with governmental authorities, so they first sued the developer, Botiford, and the contractor, Miller, and then just, I forget how long it was later, but just before limitations ran on anything they might have done, they filed a shotgun, what I call a shotgun pleading, against Land America Commonwealth Title of Fort Worth, Land America Financial Group, which had nothing to do with this transaction, Commonwealth Land Title Insurance Company, which had nothing to do with the transaction, although it did issue the policy, and the policy stands. They've got good title to this property. They sued Tom Vogt, the surveyor, Cendant Mortgage Company, which had lent them the money. Kind of reminds me of the old lender liability cases where times went bad and they sued the lender for giving them the money to get them in trouble. But they sued the Brown Law Firm, which drew papers. They sued Steve Brown, a principal of that firm, who I don't believe had anything to do with this transaction. And they sued Vanessa McCaffrey, who was the closer. Now, these two cases were eventually consolidated, and so we now had 11 defendants, all accused of fraud, breach of fiduciary duty, DTPA violations, breach of contract, negligence, negligent risk representation, suit for declaratory judgment, suit to remove cloud from title, and suit for attorney's fees. It's shown by the record they settled with the builder. I think the amount's in the record, $25,000. And they non-suited the surveyor. This is the guy they complain about all the time, didn't do things correctly. So out of the hundreds of pages that are before you, I believe that this court can only needs to consider a few documents to get to where we need to be with your decision. First, I would recommend looking at plaintiff's second amended original petition. And despite the shotgun nature of that pleading, it's clear that the only real complaint against the title companies which closed this transaction is that they allegedly had a duty to advise the purchasers who had signed a contract that this was an unrecorded subdivision. They say we had a duty to do that. And that we did not do it. I think we've cited authorities and produced plenty of evidence contrary to both of those positions.
Your position is she has a title to her property. It's not encumbered. Whether it's in the city or not in the city is not an issue. She has title to her property.
That's correct. That's correct. And no claim has ever been made on this title policy. No claim whatsoever. We've just been sued for those causes of action that I just alleged, or just pointed out. While when you look at that amended petition of the Solanos, take note of paragraph 21, where they judicially admit that they could have obtained a variance for a septic tank at an increased cost. Now, elsewhere in the many documents that Ms. Solano has filed with you, and I can't point it out to you right now, but will if you ask me to, she says that she didn't have the money because she'd spent so much on this lawsuit that she didn't have the money to get that variance. I assume it you had to have a better septic tank than...
If she is correct that it was represented to her that land was in the city, and it is not, is there anyone in your theory that's supposed to tell her, by the way, it's not in the city after all?
Well, of course, I think that the developer and builder should have told her that. We did.
You did tell her it was not in the city?
The minute this contract was turned in, the first thing that happens is an employee puts that legal description that's on the contract that the Solano submitted to us. And we don't know what they're asking for us to insure until they tell us. And so we look at it, we put it in the computer, and it shows up on a couple of the documents because it's in that computer. But the first thing our title examiner notices is that, wait a minute, there's no such property because it's not a record.
And how is this communicated to her?
It was communicated orally, I'm told, by one of the witnesses, and also it's in the commitment. In other words, the title company issued, they required a survey, a meets and bounds survey, and Boat did it. Boat goes out, comes in with a meets and bounds survey. We issue a commitment to the Solanos, which also says in there that they must provide such a survey.
So they paid for that survey?
It should have been paid for by the seller because the contract provided that the seller would furnish
seller,
a survey.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's the case or not, frankly.
Does she get the commitment or does the mortgage company get the commitment?
Beg your pardon?
You said that it appeared in writing to her in the commitment, and I was asking you, does the commitment go to her, or does it go to the mortgage company?
It went to the Solanos, and Mr. Solano signed for it, acknowledged the receipt of it. And in it, of course, it mentions no lots and blocks. It mentions no city. It just says, in fact, I'll get to it in a minute and tell you the important language in that. Second, I'd look at our pleadings. Third, at our motions for summary judgment. And the expert opinion of Bob Philo. Mr. Philo once served as the director of title insurance. I think they called him assistant director, but he was in charge of regulating all the title insurance companies in Texas. And I know of no person who's a better expert than Bob Philo and qualified to do that. Fourth, of course, look at Ms. Solano's two responses to our motion for summary judgments. There are no affidavits to support any testimony, no sworn documents, just arguments and conclusions, many of which are libelous, if they weren't in court, I suppose, about accusations that she makes against everybody in this lawsuit, including all the lawyers. So let's first look at the TREC contract, which Mr. Solano signed. The TREC contract, of course, was promulgated by the Texas Real Estate Commission, and it's a very fair contract. It was put together years ago by a group of real estate lawyers and realtors. And it contains numerous clauses which put a buyer on notice what to expect from the title company in a transaction that they're about to enter into. And it specifically mentions government regulations. For example, paragraph 6A of the contract that Mr. Solano signed says, quote, title policy, seller shall furnish to buyer an owner policy of title insurance subject to the promulgated exclusions, parent, including existing building and zoning ordinances. It goes on to say, seller shall cause a survey to be delivered to buyers Now, that's the contract, and it said seller will provide the survey, which is typical. Our commitment, however, went a step beyond that because the Solanos were asking us to insure their title, and we said we want you to provide a survey. It could have been the same one, of course, by a surveyor approved by us, giving a meets and bounds description because, as I say, this subdivision did not exist of record. Buyer may object to existing building and zoning ordinances and matters shown on the survey if buyer determines that such ordinance, items, or matters prohibit the use of the property. Buyer has 7 days to do that. Then there's a notice to buyer and seller. As I say, they did a good job with this contract when they promulgated it. It says, if a title policy is furnished, the commitment should be promptly reviewed by an attorney of buyer's choice due to the time limitations on buyer's right to object. Goes on, to determine if the property is located within a municipality's extraterritorial jurisdiction or is likely to be located within a municipality's extraterritorial jurisdiction. That's hard to say. It says to the buyer, contact all municipalities located in the general proximity of the property for further information. These are not title matters. These are not in the real estate records, and title companies do not insure against these ordinances, zoning, whatever ordinance there may be, and she's run into some of those problems. Goes on to say, escrow agent is not a party to this contract and does not have any liability for the performance or non-performance of any party to this contract. Consult your attorney. This contract is intended to be legally binding. Read it carefully. That's in all caps. Read it carefully. If you do not understand the effect of this contract, consult your attorney before signing. Now, the contract they entered into called for the sale of Lot 43, Block 1, the Hills of Gilmore Creek Addition. As I've said, when that came to us, we put that in the computer. Just like if you came to us with a contract and said Lot 1, Block 2, Park Hill, that's what we'd put in there. And then if we found that that didn't exist or that was the wrong property, then that's when things would begin to change. And that's what happened here. We required that survey, and then most everything after that was all the meets and bounds description. I think that lot and block appeared on the closing statement, the HUD 1. There's a little spot there to put the property. It's usually an address. And as our expert says, a HUD 1 is not something you rely on for your description of your property. So my client declined to insure.
Excuse me. Was the contract ever amended to substitute in the meets and bounds after the survey was completed?
No, the contract was never amended that I've ever seen.
Okay.
At any rate, Tom Voigt, who has subsequently been non-suited from this case, prepared the survey dated March 14, 2001, and it was receipted for by Mr. Solano. Okay, that Mr. Voigt's physical and legal description of the property makes it clear that the property is in an unrecorded subdivision. Once more, here comes something in writing to the Solanos that says you're dealing with something that you didn't know about, or allegedly didn't know about. On the face of the survey plat, there appears the following language. Address. Not legal, but address. High Plains Court, Tract 43 of the Hills of Gilmore Creek, Phase 2, Parent, all caps, unrecorded plat, Tarrant County, Texas. Legal. Being a tract of land out of the J. Lee Survey Abstract Number 949 and the M. Townsend Survey Abstract 1551, and being more particularly described by meets and bounds as follows. Then follows a lengthy meets and bounds description of this property.
How does that tell you it's not in the city of Fort Worth?
It doesn't mention the city of Fort Worth. It just says Tarrant County, Texas. It doesn't say no, but he eliminated that prior statement about City of Fort Worth, which was in the contract that the Solano signed. Also, on the face of the plat, Mr. Voigt refers to two of the corners as being, in all caps, unrecorded platted corner. Also, on the face of the plat, he states, in all caps, only those easements shown on the unrecorded plat are depicted. So, based on that, the title company provided a commitment to John Solano prior to closing, which he receipted for, as I've said. And it also provided, even though we already had it at that point, provided that they would provide this survey, which they had. And it describes the property only by meets and bounds. Nowhere does it refer to any lot and block or any subdivision.
So it doesn't mention unincorporated area of Tarrant County? Or
the survey did, but the...
It says unincorporated area?
Well, no, it didn't. It said unrecorded plat is what it said on the survey.
Okay, but you could have an unrecorded area in the city or an unrecorded area out of the city.
I think you're right.
So...
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, all the commitment that we issue describes the property as it should be described by meets and bounds, because that's the only legal description out there. The one used by the seller was not a property.
What would keep it from being in the city of Watauga?
Well, nothing.
How do you know it's in Fort? You don't say it's in Fort Worth or not in Fort Worth. Well, I don't. There's a huge number of municipalities in Tarrant County.
No, typically, most legal descriptions I see don't refer to the city. I mean, I certainly could, and I've seen them that do, but many of them do not. This just says Tarrant County, Texas. The commitment goes on to state, exclusions are title risks that a policy generally does not cover. Exclusions are contained in the policy but not shown or discussed in the... You can get a copy of the policy form, tells them where to get that. You can also get a brochure that explains it. Exclusions that are in the policy issued to them. We do not cover loss caused by the exercise of governmental police power or the enforcement or violation of any law or governmental regulation. This includes building and zoning ordinances and laws and regulations concerning land use and improvements on land. So say they're not part of the real estate records. Governmental regulation is defined any federal, state, or local law, constitutional provision, regulation, ordinance, or guideline. Goes on to say, this document is title insurance. It is not an opinion or report of your title. It covers losses resulting from a covered title risk. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fortney. Ms. Alano, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal.
He failed to address the initial change stamp that altered the terms of the title insurance. And he states that when they were informed, that they told us. Well, they didn't. They even demanded another $2,500 down in compliance with a contract that they already knew the legal description didn't exist and was incorrect. And they still didn't tell us. And
tell you.
They didn't tell us that block subdivision City of Fort Worth didn't exist. And he talks about information in this contract that states they're not responsible if it's in if it's not located in a city, that you have to check it out yourself. Well, that was when they altered this and checked this box. But even if you look at that, if you flip back to the very front page of the contract, it's lot, block, subdivision, City of Fort Worth. So it still wouldn't have required anybody to look into whether or not that legal description existed or whether or not the zoning and permits would be allowed.
So your big picture problem is, thought you bought a house in a platted subdivision in the City of Fort Worth. It turned out to be unplatted, not in the City of Fort Worth, and your complaint with them is they should have told you that. Is that kind of...
They already knew it. The title exam for the purpose of title insurance. Not only that, they had a contract with Cendant, PHH.
So I'm asking you, is that your big picture complaint with them?
One of them, yes.
Okay.
The second is that they have misrepresented things to the courts, and that just really upsets me. The signature, my husband did not give the contract to Commonwealth Land Title Company. And if you look at the sequence of signature pages, you'll see that the real estate agent pinned the contract. My husband signed it, gave him a check for $2,500. It left his, my husband, he took it to the seller. The seller accepted and agreed to sell and convey lot, block, subdivision, City of Fort Worth. None of that exists, legally exists. That doesn't legally exist, okay? So, and the signature page
and even the contract itself shows that the closing and all of the recorded documents would be done by Commonwealth Land Title Company. Their agents, they are responsible for their agents and everyone else. And I need to also talk about the attorney, that contract that the title company had with Cendant Mortgage shows on Cendant's documents that Commonwealth Land Title is the attorney representing us. There was actually more than one trustee. Steve Brown was the trustee noted on all of the mechanics lien notes and contracts filed of record, but the deed of trust stated that William F. Brown was the only person who was allowed to do duties of the trust, okay? And so you've got more than one trustee, and you can't do that. And I need to, before my time is up, the commitment, the answers to interrogatories and produce all documents from Cendant Mortgage. When it talks about the commitment was required to be given to them, not to us. And when they state the hold harmless, everything on the hold harmless is false. My husband's, all those signatures are forged. Those aren't even his initials on there. And everything proves because of the fact that this commitment did not even exist until after closing. And the original commitment, and this is original Cendant disclosure, it was dated 4-17-01, Commonwealth Land Title Company, okay? Now, Commonwealth Land Title Company gave a commitment stating the signature page is blank. The title policy is not authorized if it's blank. They knew for a fact because of the contract that they had entered into. This is a one-time construction closing, and it's the closing agent attorney instructions. And there's only lot block subdivision, City of Fort Worth, on all documents that they executed for Cendant. Loan contracts, everything, no meets and bounds. The title commitment was required to be given to Cendant, not to the customer. All pre-closing activity was to take place without us. All those documents, we paid referral fees to PHH, which our company reimbursed and showed as taxable income to us. The documents that show the date on which Commonwealth Land Title submitted and mailed by certified mail to PHH was on 4/17. The closing took place on 4/12. All their claims about having issued something to my husband is false.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Solano. Your time is now up. Thank you, Mr. Fortney. We appreciate your arguments today and your briefing. Your case is submitted and you are excused.
Okay, to do one more?